I know Dr. Evid for over 20 years. Yeah, he'd be very good to the Chinese agriculture research.
Yeah, you be quiet now, because if he starts telling stories on me, I'll be in trouble. but, you know, I asked that question about roots because that's how we met, counting roots, washing roots.
Yeah.
Well, it's appropriate that this is the last talk, because this isn't a talk about science. It's a talk about cooperation, and it's a rah-rah talk. It's a talk about how we can work together. In 1993, the United States Department of Agriculture and the China Ministry of Science and Technology signed a joint protocol on agricultural research. And underneath that joint protocol, they established three flagship programs, one in agricultural biotechnology, one in water-saving technologies, and one in gene bank technologies. And all three of those are producing really great research. I'm going to focus today on the one on water-saving technologies. And I want to point out, just on this slide, some of the things that we're talking about. We're talking about variable rate irrigation with folks at Northwest Agricultural and Forest University, talking about sensing. You see different crop temperatures in the upper right-hand side in the center pivot field, and we're talking about looking at differences, for instance, in the water use and the evaporative losses from sprinkler versus subsurface drip irrigation in the lower right. Make sure we're in the right spot. Also underneath this USDA China MOST protocol are several annexes, and I've listed them here. If you're close, you can probably read them. But we have a grazing land ecosystem restoration annex, soil water conservation and environmental protection, wheat quality and pathology, agricultural products processing, which is producing some interesting research, wheat quality and pathology, food safety, biofuel research, food safety research, dairy production and processing, efficient irrigation, agroecology and sustainability, and water use for arid agriculture. And listed are the USDA side locations and the locations in China and the PIs, or at least the institution of the PIs in those annexes. So we meet every year, and in the Water Saving Technologies flagship program, we have now met for the third time. We had a joint working group that is met for the entire USDA China MOST protocol every year since 2003. But 3 years ago, we decided that we would have a separate technical conference so that the scientists could get together, not just the bigwigs. And so we did that in Fort Collins 3 years ago. Last year, we were at the CIGR meeting in Beijing, and this year we were in Long Beach, California, and we had three sessions on water saving through micro-irrigation, water saving through irrigation control by sensor feedback, and water saving through variable rate irrigation. And I might mention that there are aspects of those that are being talked about at these meetings today. And participants that came to that from China, there were 14. So we had a full day session, many, many high quality talks. They also attended the International Irrigation Association meeting and trade show, which was highly interesting because it's a huge trade show, and the participants got to see all the new technology from around the world available for irrigation. And the 2 day ASAB Irrigation Symposium. That's the American Society for Agricultural and Biological Engineers, and the Micro-Irrigation Multi-State Research Committee meeting at the end of the week. So we had a really great great get-together there, and a lot of not just federal but state, university, and extension workers presented at all those meetings. Earlier this year, we were in Beijing for a water saving through micro-irrigation conference. That was very fruitful. We attended the International Exchange and Training Workshop on Micro-Irrigation in Qifeng, which was partly sponsored by the Water Conservancy Bureau, but also by China Agricultural University and the Muhei Water Saving Engineering Equipment Company. And we toured their facility, which is a rather large, very large facility devoted to producing plastic irrigation parts, including several different kinds of drip tape for surface and subsurface drip irrigation, PVC and polyethylene irrigation pipe from 12 inches on down, and filtration equipment for drip irrigation systems. Well, very advanced, and a huge increase in drip irrigation in China that's paralleling the increase in drip irrigation in the U.S. The U.S. irrigation now of the irrigated area in the U.S., 65% of it is pressurized. Of that 65% that's pressurized, fully 9% of that is micro-irrigation today, and it is increasing by leaps and bounds. In California, 5 years ago, almost 100% of almond production, which is the most important tree crop in California, was flood irrigated. Today, it's 60% micro-irrigation. So there's a huge change in irrigation application methods in both China and in the U.S., and the opportunities to do joint research on those problems are very great. And then we ended with discussions on subsurface drip irrigation and variable rate irrigation at Northwest Ag and Forest University in Yangling. And the most important part of this 10-day trip and the most fun part of this 10-day trip occurred there, and it goes along with our last speaker's presentation. We spent a whole morning listening to 7 graduate students talk about their research. And that was the most fun time, because we got to hear from them what they were working on, how they saw the problem, how they were addressing the problems, and what they were doing. And it was really a great, great time. Probably the most productive time of the whole thing. Earlier this year, several state and university researchers and USDA researchers went to a workshop under the 111 project, which is a project in China to bring foreign experts to China. And there were 29 presentations, a field trip to Gansu province, and a tour of the Hetao Irrigation District in Inner Mongolia. So there's a lot of cross-fertilization going on under this program. And then last year, the Sino-U.S. Water Saving Technology Flagship Project Workshop occurred at the CIGR Congress. And Dr. Sui, for instance, presented at that. And we had 18 presentations by Chinese and USDA ARS scientists and engineers presenting the state of the art on water saving technologies, followed by a field tour. And we also went to Yangling, to Northwest Forest and Agricultural University, or Northwest Agricultural and Forest University. We're also involved with the International Atomic Energy Agency and Chinese partners in a project on landscape salinity and water management for improving agricultural productivity. And our Chinese colleagues that are involved in this are mostly involved in growing rice near the ocean with brackish waters and with some saltwater intrusion. And so they're very interested in assessing salinity in the field in real time. And here we're demonstrating a new sensor that can be used in salt-affected soils to automatically sense both the soil water content and the bulk electrical conductivity and temperature of the soil at different depths in a profile that can be installed in the field. And that will be actually on the market next year. And then Jirka Semunek came along and did a Hydrus 1D betazone flow and transport demonstration and trained people to use that software, and that work's ongoing. And as I said, we went to Northwest Ag and Forest University and did more work there. There's a lot of scientific visits and cooperation going on. We've had scientists from the Institute for Water and Hydrologic Research visiting ARS at Jonesboro, Arkansas, Portageville, Missouri, in Maricopa, Arizona. And students working at those sites, they visited the Water Management Research Unit at Fort Collins. They came to Bushland and visited us, and they went to Stoneville and visited Dr. Sui and his research in irrigation and sensing. They also went to the Hydrology and Remote Sensing Laboratory, and there's some important cooperation going on there in graduate student education with the Bill Kustas and his group in remote sensing. I was just over there this morning before I came over here, and Bill Kustas gave quite remarkable talk about all the applications of the two-source energy balance model coupled with satellite data at different resolutions to get right down to the field scale and show what ET can be in the field. And then Dr. Lee and Dr. and Mr. Wu of the Muhe Water Saving Engineering Company visited us, and we talked a lot about what kind of equipment is needed to install subsurface drip irrigation. As I said, a lot of graduate student education is going on, both at the HSRL in Beltsville, but also in places like Jonesboro, Arkansas, where we have a student working with Michelle Reba at the School of HSRL has got had two or three students, and one's just finishing up. There's quite a bit of cooperation with the lab at Parlier, California. And this is one of the more productive cooperative efforts because they're doing multi-year field and greenhouse trials on selenium-laden soils with the University of Science and Technology Center in Suzhou, China, and evaluating alternative crops for their ability to accumulate selenium and to produce selenium-rich plant products. And this is very important because a lot of our drainage soils are high in salinity, both in China and in the U.S. So it's important research for us, and the folks at Parlier are conducting that research at Parlier as well. They've already organized three international conferences on this over the past 3 years. And also they're doing joint research on management strategies to increase nitrogen use efficiency and reducing losses to the environment. In future cooperation, we face very similar problems in China and the U.S. The similarity is really quite amazing once you get to know the lay of the land. We're both facing water scarcity problems. Even in the eastern U.S., agricultural production is hampered by short-term summertime droughts of a week to 10 days or even 2 weeks that require irrigation to get us through those periods such that we can maintain high yields. So we're looking at moving irrigation, and it's actually happening into our eastern states, and we're seeing a lot of movement of high technology irrigation into areas of China, as one of the previous speakers discussed. We have water and soil quality issues, climate variability issues, and we've already experienced it, and China is experiencing it, the depopulation of rural areas, which means that we have to have higher technology and better trained people in those areas. And this is true in this country, too. We have to have better trained people in our rural areas to use the high technology that's coming along. So we can take advantage of new technologies in irrigation and plant and soil sensing, advances in decision support systems, in increasingly educated workforces. And I would finish with saying that faced with similar problems and opportunities, cooperation is natural and fruitful for our two countries. So thank you. Dr. Yinong Li is my counterpart in China, leading this Water Saving Technologies program. And you're free to contact either one of us if you're interested in this joint U.S.-Chinese program. Thank you.
Well, we have enough time for questions to stop at it.
It's a rah-rah speech, so if you do have interest in joining the effort, and particularly if you have graduate students that you would like to send from China to do study or to do research in the U.S. at USDA labs, please do contact me, and we'll see what can be done. Yes, sir.
You enlist 10 people from industry. You mentioned academia primarily, but there's a lot of talent in the industry that really could be, and there's a lot of industrial movement of industry into China also. So that would be a very strong pool to draw from.
And actually, we have done that, which is why we met at the irrigation show. So we had a lot of industry participation at that show, and we're working with some American companies that are working with irrigation systems in the U.S., in China and the U.S., and also with data logging systems and sensor systems in both countries. So, yeah, and you're right. We need to be coupled tightly with industry because where are we headed with all this? We're taking the knowledge that we're gaining, the understanding of systems that we're gaining, we're putting them together into decision support systems to better manage agriculture with fewer people and more technology. And we won't achieve those goals without industry coming into play to actually vend those products, manufacture and sell them and support them. Because it's not going to be done through the regular extension network that we're also familiar with. This sort of thing is going to happen with industry. Thank you. It was a good question.
Any more questions?
Yeah.
Well, I have a question.
Yeah.
I think last, I see you've been travel both China and the U.S. last 2 years more frequently. But in terms of scale, it seems small to me. Is any chance you see in the future you will have a bigger meetings to attract more participants from the well, right now it's pretty much the USDA deal.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to expand this to the universities?
Well, we're not, because we're USDA and we don't like universities.
Okay.
So. My Texas A&M friend who works across the street from me in the same fields. So obviously it's not true. We want to cooperate with universities. There are certain political realities that we have to deal with. But you actually touched on something that I've made part of my mission since I became the U.S. lead this year on this flagship program, and that is to broaden the involvement, because at every USDA laboratory there's cooperation with the university at that location. Every single one. It doesn't matter where you go in the United States, there's cooperation with that university. And so to pretend that we don't have colleagues is counterproductive and fruitless. And so we're going to have to move forward with a broader vision for this as time goes on. And I will work at that, I can tell you that. And we'll see what we can achieve. We are now beginning to think about next year's meeting. It'll be sometime next summer probably. As soon as Dr. Tsui tells me where it's going to be and what it's going to be about, well, then we can announce it to the world, right, Tsui? We're still trying to figure it out, but it'll be somewhere in China next year. Yeah. So we'll let everybody know. Okay. Thank you.
Just one comment. I come from the seed industry, and I work with Syngenta, but I have friends in Pioneer and in Monsanto and across industry. Right now, in the basic sciences of that, scientists working in the U.S. and some of the basic science supporting all the plant breeding going on, approximately one-third of the scientists that are working professionally in the U.S. right now are from China. It's a tremendous pool of people have a great deal of experience in the U.S., but a great deal of training from China, from wherever else they got their subsequent education. So it is a tremendous pool that really should be tapped.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I see you travel China a lot of time, and you know China pretty well.
No, not really.
Yeah. Okay, but this is a big question. Based on your experience, what exactly do you feel China really needs from U.S.? Right now, the research institute in the university have a better facility, more students, more funding and stuff. So what exactly do they need from here? And also, what benefit can the U.S. get from this kind of collaboration?
That's a really obvious question that the folks in Washington, D.C. ask. Why do you do that? And it's a good question, because we have to be able to defend it. And it's personal experience that what we gain is a broader understanding of agriculture and how it works in the world. We see how the technologies that we're working with and the systems that we're working with could be applied to a different situation, and whether they're successful in that situation. Now, I'll take a metaphor from crop modeling. If you work with a crop model in the Great Plains for winter wheat and work on it for 20 years and develop it, you can be darn sure it'll work fairly well for the Great Plains. But when we worked with Ceres wheat, mod crop, I think it was, there were three models that we worked with, and we applied them to data from the southern high plains and from the wheat-growing region in China, guess what? They didn't work. Now, and that was an important lesson because it pointed to the problems with those models. They're structural problems. They're problems of the models not really being science-based enough but too empirical. And so they have to be fit again, and then if you have to fit a model to make it work, you can be sure that when conditions change, it's probably still not going to work. So you're going to have that problem. So that's sort of a metaphor for everything that we do. I've done drip irrigation research with researchers in Uzbekistan. It works differently there. We've looked at water conservation, soil water measurement in different countries. I've worked in Egypt and the Middle East, and everywhere the conditions are different, and the way the crops develop are different because of those conditions, and the way our systems that we're developing to better manage crops work is different, and sometimes systems fail because of the environment. So not only do we learn more by having those experiences in those locations, but the people we're working with in those locations gain that experience as well. And when we have a Chinese graduate student come and stay for a year at a USDA facility, they experience that different environment too, and they see how differently not only does whatever they're studying work, but how differently the organization works, how differently people work, just how vastly different people around the world are. And I think the more we do that, the better off we all are. So I think the benefits are very great, but it's hard to say that to Congress.
Well, thank you, Doctor. Well, we are successful adjourn our session. Next, it will be our business meeting. For these members from our community, you are welcome to stay for our business meeting. All the other guests, if you want, you are free to leave or stay. Probably we'll take 5 minutes break, then we will start our business meeting. Thank you.